If a tree falls in a forest and there is no one there to hear it, does it make a sound? Now that laugh would suggest to me that some of you have contemplated this or heard this question. It's a philosophical question designed for people to sit around a table and waste life, I feel. It's designed to think about life and existence and to look at it from a different perspective. This week I've spent a bit of time just reading different people's response and perspective to this question. I'm amazed at how different we are, how differently we see something as simple as this question. Some people, of course, would say, well, of course it makes a sound when it falls. And others would say, but how do you know if no one's there to see it or to hear it? Some people would say, well, no, the tree doesn't make a sound. It just creates sound waves that travel around the space. The sound is made if a person's there to hear it, and when it hits your ears, then it becomes sound. So then if no one is there to hear it, does it really make a sound, you know? It's fascinating when you get into this stuff. I mean, that's what I waste my time with. I've got nothing else to do during the week. So, but I was thinking, what if the person was deaf but saw the tree fall? But they couldn't hear it. Did it make a sound? What if you were there and you heard the sound of the tree falling and I wasn't there and I didn't hear it? Would I believe that it made a sound if you told me or not? You know, we could go around in circles on this all day, couldn't we? In fact, maybe we should have a coffee. We could just spend the rest of the afternoon contemplating that question. Anyone want to do that? No, you've got other more important things to do? Okay, fair enough. As I approached this Christmas story this year, I was amazed in the story at how few people responded to the birth of Jesus at that time. We sit there going, what a wonderful night, what a wonderful story. But the people in the story, there were very few people that observed and witnessed this amazing event. And so maybe we could say, if the Savior of the world was born in a town in a manger and there was no one there to see it, did it happen? And for many people around the world, the answer can be as varied as the answer to the previous question. Well, it all depends on your perspective. See, none of us were there at the birth. But fortunately, God did provide witnesses to this incredible event. There were people there to see it, just not the ones that we would think would be there at the time. So last week I looked at the unexpected sort of main characters that God chose for this event. This week I want to look at the unexpected witnesses that God used to testify that Jesus was born. So obviously it's going to be the shepherds and the Magi. So let's look at the shepherds. You imagine this. As Mary gave birth to Jesus in a place for animals, not in a nice hospital bed, not in her comfort of her own home, not even in her family's home in Bethlehem, but in a place where animals hung out, an angel appeared out in the fields before some shepherds who were simply working in the fields doing their duty. They were no one special. They were just ordinary shepherds. They were not praying for the Messiah. Well, they might have been. I don't know. I wasn't there, were you? We can't tell me I'm wrong because, no. But, you know, they were just out there doing their thing, living in the fields. I don't know what they did. Maybe they just slept. Maybe they played cards. Who knows? These people were kind of outcasts in their society. They lived in the fields. They were probably smelly and dirty. They wouldn't have had a daily shower like many of us do. Probably didn't have a wardrobe of nice clean clothes and work clothes. You know, they didn't come in at the end of the day and have a nice bed to sleep in. They didn't turn up on Sunday at church all dressed up nice. And they were shepherds. They were probably quite simple folk, many of them. Oh, they're making a huge judgment there, of course. But they were probably raising lambs for the sacrifices at the temple, which is really interesting that God chose these people. But they were making sure that these lambs had no blemishes or bruises, that they had no imperfections. They were trying to raise them the best they could, protecting them and all that. The people, their bosses, the people that owned the sheep wanted the best lambs so that God would be impressed. And they got these shepherds to make sure that the best lambs are raised. But I'm pretty sure that these same shepherds would not have been welcome in the palace or in the temple. These were the people that do the work nobody else wants to do. But while these few shepherds were working, an angel turned up and declared the reality of Jesus, the baby born to man. While they were at work, this incredible being, this massive angel, well, I don't know if it was massive, it was an angel, suddenly appeared, and the glory of the Lord shone around them. The angel was so supernatural, so out of the ordinary, so unexpected that they were terrified. And the angel opened with the usual angel greeting, "Do not be afraid." You ever notice that whenever an angel turns up to someone, they always start with "do not be afraid"? It's like Angel School 101. This is how you greet people: "Do not be afraid." Why? Because they are terrifying. Their reality, their existence, the fact that they suddenly appear just is not an everyday thing. But then this angel said, "I bring you good news. Don't be afraid. I'll bring you good news that will cause great joy for all the people. Today, in the town of David, a Savior has been born to you. He is the Messiah, the Lord." These shepherds, they may have been simple farm workers. They may have been just people that are kind of out there doing their thing, but they would have known about the Messiah. They would have grown up in the culture where the Messiah was looked forward to, hoped for, talked about. And the angel said, "He is the Messiah." And then he said to them, "This will be a sign to you. You shepherds will find a baby wrapped in cloths and lying in a manger." Now you imagine if he'd have gone to the high priest and said that, or he'd have gone to the rich people and said, "The King of Israel is lying in a manger." It would have been just no sense. But he said it to these shepherds, and these guys would have known what that meant. And while they were pondering this, suddenly there was this most magnificent angelic choir. Now, I don't know about you, I've never come across an angelic host, but it's not three or four. It's not like the local Anglican church choir where you've got half a dozen people, or maybe it wasn't even the big main church choir of 30 or 40 people. I mean, a host is like thousands. It would have been incredible, celebrating this momentous occasion, singing that was fit for a king, and no one else heard it. It's just mind-blowing. They're just these shepherds in the field. This, to me, I could imagine it must have filled the sky, and yet only these shepherds saw it. Incredible. And it says that after the angels disappeared, that these shepherds talked amongst themselves and they said, "Let's go and find out if what we've just heard is true." Have you ever had a supernatural experience? Have you ever had something that's so out of the blue that you said, "I just have to go and see that it's true"? Last week we heard Mary heard from an angel this incredible news. Joseph had heard in a dream and he acted on it. These guys did the same thing. "Let's go check it out." So they left their sheep behind. They went into Bethlehem. They hunted around until they found the baby. How did they know where to look? He will be lying in a manger. So where do we go to find a manger? Well, we don't go to the 5-star hotels. We don't go to Kandala or Remuera or those rich places looking in the houses of those that have got plenty. We go looking where the animals are kept. We go looking in the stables and the stalls, a place where a manger would be. Angels are pretty specific, I figure, when you read. And so they went and they found this baby, and it was exactly as they were told, the most unlikely sight for the Savior of the world, for the King of the Jews to be born. And it was just as the angels said. And these shepherds were so amazed and so kind of blown away by this that it says they went and told everyone about what they had seen and heard. Can you imagine it? This is incredible. And they're going out. They were witnesses to this most incredible event that no one had heard of. So for me, I asked lots of questions. Who did they tell? Was it still nighttime? Did they only tell people for a few minutes, for an hour, for the rest of the night? Did it spill over into the next day? Were they so impacted by the angel, the heavenly choir, and the fulfillment of all that they had seen that they just couldn't stop talking about it? You know, I think these guys were so, so impacted by this event that their telling wasn't just a Christmas Eve or a Christmas Day event. It was something that would carry on. I mean, how could you not tell people what you had just experienced? And what do you see in this? Is suddenly your smelly work clothes don't matter. Their low status didn't hold them back. They simply spread the word to anyone who would listen. And it says that the people that heard the shepherd's testimony were amazed at their words. Some other translations say that the people wondered at their words, and others say that they were astonished at the word. You know, this response, I mean, if you had this smelly shepherd farmer come in and, you know, come and say to you, oh, I've just been out in the fields and we've had this angel speak to us in a heavenly choir that nobody else heard, and then we saw the king of the Jews sitting in an animal's trough, and would you be amazed, astonished, wondering? We would, wouldn't we? This testimony made people think, probably caused a bit of a ruckus, but did it make a difference? As far as the text goes, as far as what we read in the Bible, no one else went to see for themselves. We don't know if Mary and Joseph had to fend off and say, the baby's sleeping, you've got to hold off. You know, there's no evidence that there were just tons of people responding to this witnessing. And I wonder, did the hearers miss the message because of the messengers? Did they not believe it because of who the shepherds were? I don't know. Maybe they didn't value what they heard because the package that was delivered in was not acceptable. Who knows? We don't know. But it does say this: the shepherds went back to their fields worshipping, rejoicing, and glorifying God for what they had seen and heard. And I wonder, did they continue to share their experience for the days and the weeks and the months following? Did they recount these events at the local pub when they came back into town, when their shift had finished, you know, when they came home? Did they tell people over a beer or whatever the places were? You know, I wonder if they'd kept telling people about this incredible event. We don't know. But I imagine that they just couldn't. They were so impacted. Yeah? Because this is what Jesus does, isn't he? He impacts our lives. You know, in Jewish law, there has to be two witnesses whose story corroborates the events described in a legal setting for anything to be believed. Any account of an event to be believed, there's got to be two stories that line up and corroborate it. And I find it fascinating that in these two authors, Matthew and Luke, we discover two very, very different accounts of the birth of Jesus, and yet they line up. Luke describes the encounters of the angel with Mary. Oh, sorry, this is the birth of Jesus. Luke describes the encounters of the angel with Mary and the shepherds from the... Luke describes the encounters of an angel with Mary and then with the shepherds, and it's a very experiential kind of perspective. You know, Mary engaged with the angel, and the shepherds kind of have this amazing experience. Whereas Matthew's perspective shows a kind of a more practical approach. It was just saying, you know, this, you know, Mary, Joseph had found in a dream, and the Magi came, and it was very, very practical. But it's really interesting seeing these very two different perspectives tell the same story in its own unique way. You know, we could not get two very different witnesses to this event. Now, of course, the first were the shepherds. They were Israelites. They were part of God's people. They were specialists, I think, in preparing the lambs for the Passover sacrifices. And now, in Matthew, we see someone who is completely opposite. We see witnesses who are Gentiles. They're educated. They wear nice clothes. They've got wealth and gifts. But they're also astrologers. They were the Magi, completely different kettle of fish. And interestingly, they came looking for the king of the Jews, powerful, wealthy, and influential people. And they embarked on this journey from their homeland, which we're not totally sure where it's from, but they came to acknowledge the king of the Jews. They'd seen the star of the king in the sky, and they came to turn up to acknowledge in a royal way, if you like. They came to pay homage, I guess. Why? We don't know. The text doesn't say. There's tons of information around, tons of speculation, but what we do know, that they turned up. believing that a king had been born. The text in the Bible, it says that they saw his star in the sky and the star prompted them to move. Whatever the star was, it motivated these people to load up their camels and we don't know how many, you know, we sing of three, but we believe there's an awful lot more of them. And they come to see this new king, and it's really interesting that in this story, they didn't come just to see, they came to worship. Really fascinating. They came to worship a king who was not their own, and yet something in them knew that they needed to worship. It's an amazing statement. These Gentiles from outside the Jewish nation recognized that the king of the Jews was born and he was worthy to be worshipped. How long had they been traveling? We don't know. But here's the thing, they got to Jerusalem sometime after Jesus was born. They'd been journeying with a goal in mind to see this king so that they could worship him. And they entered Jerusalem. I wonder if they were expecting celebration. I wonder if they were expecting a city, the capital city, if you like, the city of Israel, to be rejoicing that their king had been born. And if you read the text, it says this, that they asked everyone, where is the one born the king of the Jews? It suggests that they continue. They didn't just come up to the person at the gate and said, where's the king of the Jews? Oh, he's not here. Okay, we're going to go to Bethlehem. It suggests that they went round kind of like just bugging everyone, if you can put it that way. Where's the king of the Jews? They were so convinced that the king was born, and so they went to the city of Israel, and nobody had a clue what was going on. Really, really fascinating. They were adamant that Jesus was born and that the king was real, and nobody had a clue what they were talking about. The city was not in a place of excited, joyful partying. They were just doing their thing, going along with the day after day stuff. You might say they were asleep, completely unaware of the momentous event that had just happened. In fact, these magi going around the city asking everyone about this new king, they were so determined to find this king that it disturbed the whole city. It created ripples of speculation and wondering that eventually reached the ears of King Herod. Notice, they never went to the king. They went to the city. They went to the high places and the low places. They went to the shops and the meeting places. They probably went into the pubs and the churches and the, I don't know, everything. They were going around. Anyone that might know something of this king, they were going for it. And of course, once King Herod heard about it, he was disturbed. Well, of course, a new king meant that his reign was about to be threatened, wasn't it? And if you think about it, the pool that the political sharks swam in just had a huge boulder dropped in. The ripples were, you know, disturbing. The news of this affected everyone. Was Herod about to be deposed as king? Those that were for him, what does that mean for us? Those that were against him or that suffered under him were probably going, does this mean we've got freedom? The whole city would have been abuzz with the people that were for him and against him and all of that. Everyone, we're the zealots and the people that were going to go, right, is this a chance for us to get in and have a move? We don't know. All of Jerusalem was disturbed. You know, Facebook, Twitter, Telegram, it would have all been a buzz. Their news sites, mainstream, alternative, out in public, in the secret, would have been commenting and spinning it according to what they believed. And the zealots, the activists would have been excited. It would have been, I mean, this is the idea. The whole of Jerusalem was disturbed. It was in turmoil. And so Herod, interesting enough, he is a master politician. He got together with the experts. He asked where the Messiah was supposed to be born. He called in the teachers and the chief priests. He spoke with the different elements within the city. He got a good picture of where things were at. And they said to him, well, the Messiah is meant to be born in Bethlehem. And then it says that Herod secretly met with the Magi and he listened to their story. When did the star appear? How long have you been traveling? Come, eat, feast. He probably fed them, you know, schmoozed them, and he was testing them and figuring out what the threat to his kingdom was. And then he makes this arrangement with them. Hey, tell you what, you go and find this king and then let me know so that I can come and worship him too. But of course, we know that Herod has a very different agenda. And so the Magi, when they hear that the king was going to be born in Bethlehem, they set off for Bethlehem. And have you noticed And amongst all of that disturbance and amongst all of that uproar, no one goes with them. No one goes with them. None of the experts, none of the king's men, none of the Israelites, none of the priests, no one. No one seems to be excited about the possibility that the promised Messiah has come. Have you ever seen that before? Because no one was expecting such a low-key, underprivileged, run-of-the-mill entrance for the Lord of all creation, the Messiah of Israel, to be born, even though the scriptures said it would be that way. But these Gentile scholars, these astrologers, were convinced. Isn't that amazing? And as they left Jerusalem, it said that the star appeared again and that they were overjoyed because they valued the stars. They knew the star had told them about this king. They had been following the star. And at this point in the story, I wonder, why didn't the star just lead them straight to Bethlehem? Why is it that they stopped at Jerusalem? Now, of course, we sort of imagine a star like holding, like a carrot on a stick with a donkey, isn't it? We sort of imagine it. But the star told them, and maybe they went, the king of Israel, it must be in Jerusalem, because that's where Israel is. That's the heart of Israel. But it didn't. It simply pointed them their way. But maybe God wanted this little interlude. Maybe he wanted them to enter Jerusalem. Maybe he wanted them to stir the city up. Maybe he wanted them to be witnesses before they'd even seen, to see what his people would do. Maybe God wanted the experts of the law to have the opportunity to hear from a faith perspective, a belief in what they hoped to be true, to see what they would do. But the people didn't follow. They simply pointed the Magi on the way, probably going, it's going to be in Bethlehem, but it's not at the moment. You just go and have your little trip. That's fine. We'll wait for the real Messiah. They had no time for astrology following Gentiles. They were happy to let them have their little adventure. If the Messiah was born, surely God would speak to his people, yeah? Surely God would speak to the priests. Surely God would speak to the chosen, not some sinful Gentile strangers. And so the Magi continued on, and guess what? They found Jesus. And it says that when they saw the child with his mother Mary, they fell on their knees and they worshipped him. Something about this child convinced them that they had found the goal of their journey, and they offered expensive gifts worthy of a king. And after being warned not to go back to Herod in a dream, they went home. I wonder what difference this experience made in their lives. Was it simply an adventure that they ticked off? Did they just go home and go, oh, well, that's fine? Or did something change in them? Did it make a difference in their families and their friends? We don't know. But I wouldn't put it beyond God to be doing something in that space. So, if a Savior was born in a small town in a manger and there was no one there to see it, did it happen? Yes, it did. Because we have the witnesses to prove it. Two independent eyewitness perspectives that have no common agenda except to declare what they have seen and heard. The shepherds and the Magi saw Jesus before he could speak, before he healed people. They saw him before he had a reputation, before he offended anyone, before he was crucified, and before he rose again, and before he ascended into heaven. They saw him in his infancy, and they worshipped him and believed him to be the Messiah, the King of the Jews. Do you believe their testimony? Do you read the story and get excited about Jesus? Do you hear the shepherd's story and the Magi's story and want to know the Savior of the world? The witnesses have done their part. They have told us what they saw and what they heard. Kind of sounds like our commission, doesn't it? Now it's up to us to believe.